Hello, one and all, and welcome to Film Fragments, a podcast where we take fragments of an actor, director, and genre and tell you our favorites from their catalog. My name is Brian Siffield. I'm your host, and I'm very excited to welcome you guys to this week's episode of Film Fragments, where today we're going to be talking about our favorite film star and Oscar nominee Kristen Stewart in honor of Love Lies Bleeding in theaters this weekend. I am so excited to be going through the career of Kristen Stewart, one of my favorite up-and-coming performers of the last couple of years. I mean, she's really solidified herself as a fantastic performer. Obviously, she got her start when she was a kid and then catapulted into a gigantic money-making franchise. And now she solidified herself as a really wonderful talent in smaller films and independent films and what have you, and then leaned all the way to an incredible Oscar nomination just a few years back. I cannot wait to delve into the career of Kristen Stewart, and I'm so excited to be talking about Kristen Stewart with today's guest. Hailing from the UK, our guest today is Tasha Jagger. She is a writer for Little White Lies, Digital Spy, and ME, and Movie Marker. Tasha, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for coming on. I'm so excited to delve into the career of Kristen Stewart with you. And before we get into talking about Kristen Stewart, I would just love to give you the opportunity to introduce yourself, talk a little bit about what you do, what got you into film, and why you love it so much.
So I've been freelancing as a film journalist for about 7 years now. I studied journalism at university, so I started like kind of doing some unpaid work with actually an American site called, it was called FanFest at the time, writing numerous articles, and I loved going to the cinema, and that's kind of where my love of film came from. At university, I kind of dipped into music journalism, news kind of things, and just didn't feel that kind of connection that I did with films. I've just always loved going to the cinema experience. And yeah, that's kind of how I got into it. And I just keep falling more in love with film every year. Especially now going to film festivals. I frequently go to London Film Festival a lot. And yeah.
Awesome. Awesome. Very cool stuff over there. And now regarding our topic of Kristen Stewart, like I said at the top, she's had quite a fascinating trajectory in her career where she did a few smaller films. Then obviously the Twilight series made her an even bigger name than she already was. And now she's solidified herself by working with a lot of auteurs and smaller filmmakers and doing independent films, sprinkling the occasional blockbuster in there. And now she's an Oscar nominee, which is absolutely nuts. So regarding Kristen Stewart, why do you think a lot of people get excited whenever they see her name attached to a project? And what makes you such a fan of Kristen Stewart?
I think personally for me, obviously, Twilight came out. I was quite a prime age. I was 11 when Twilight came out. And that was kind of like, you know, my understanding of like films kind of more came about. And I just found her like really fascinating as an individual, watching like her interviews. She's very carefree. You know, she really doesn't give a F, you know, about things. And so watching her career as, for example, she wasn't, I don't think she's that much older than I am. She's maybe like 5 years older than I am. So to see her go through like her 20s and things like that, it's kind of a bit relatable. She feels relatable in some weird way. And I've just been really fascinated looking at, like you said, all the kind of differences in her work, like you said, blockbusters, independent films, and things like that, and just following her career. Really, she's a very interesting person.
Yeah, I agree. I have been a fan for many years of Kristen Stewart. It definitely took me a while to really become a fan of her because I had seen her in some films that she did pre-Twilight, but obviously Twilight came out, and I was 10 years old when the first Twilight came out, and everybody wouldn't shut up about it, and I get why. It was such a huge phenomenon. It was this YA novel being adapted into a film, and then it brought us to not only Kristen Stewart, but it also really told us who Robert Pattinson was, and then Taylor Lautner, and all these other faces. And while the Twilight films are not my favorite, I will admit that right now, I knew that Kristen Stewart was someone that had a lot of potential. And then I would see her in films outside of Twilight and I'd be like, wow, this Kristen Stewart is actually like really good. And as the years progress and she's done more films and added more to her catalog, my appreciation has just grown and grown and grown. And then really the last, I would say, 5 to 6 years, I've defended Kristen Stewart till the end of time. I know that there are still people that just look at her as Bella Swan. And yeah. Yes, that's arguably her most popular character. I'm not denying that. But you shouldn't just go off of what she did in Twilight. Was her acting the best in Twilight? No, I'm definitely not the only person who thinks that. But you shouldn't just base an actor off one project, because I mean, I did the same thing with Robert Pattinson. Then I watched him in all these other films that he did. And I'm like, he's an exceptional actor, which is why that I was on the train from day one when he was cast as Batman. And everyone was like, you're stupid if you think he's going to be a good Batman. And he kicked ass as Batman. I just want to point that out. Mm-hmm. I was on the train day one. And I'm really proud of myself for that. But Kristen Stewart, huge fan of her. I cannot wait to delve into her catalog with you. I'm so curious to know your top five list. I know that you definitely hinted that there is a Twilight film in the list. Mm-hmm. I'm so curious to know which Twilight film you put. So mm-hmm. I just say, without further ado, let's get into the list. So what is your number five favorite Kristen Stewart film of all time?
I put Adventureland. I feel like it's such kind of like a classic, really. And it's very like... it's just slightly under pre-Twilight Kristen. And you know, it's kind of like it makes me feel quite warm watching it, because it is essentially like a love story. And she's very fresh-faced, and I rewatched it yesterday actually, and I was like, oh, such an easy watch, and her performance is just so natural. And that's why I also love Kristen Stewart, because every performance, even though, you know, she's playing a different character, where it'd be like someone crying, or, you know, Bella Swan being a vampire and things like that, she always remains kind of like calm and collected. And yeah, she's just super cool in this film as well.
This is a pass for me. It's a little higher on my list. I cannot wait to talk about it. I have a lot of thoughts on this one, but I'm very excited to talk about it. So my number five is actually one of Kristen Stewart's earliest films. I'm going to go with Panic Room from 2002, directed by David Fincher. This is definitely a David Fincher film that doesn't get as much discussion as other films that he's put out. But essentially, for anyone who doesn't know what this is about, Jodie Foster is the lead in this. She plays a mom who's recently divorced, and Kristen Stewart plays her daughter. And she lives in this really beautiful apartment that's in New York City. And then one night, it's getting robbed by Forrest Whitaker, Jared Leto, and Dwight Yoakam. And basically, Jodie Foster and her daughter hide in this little room, which is known as a panic room, to separate themselves, and no one could get in. The only way to get out of it is from the inside. You can't get in and everything. It's a very anxiety-inducing thriller. It's very on the edge of your seat, like typical Fincher fashion. You have no idea the directions it's going to go. It's not my favorite thing that Fincher has done. I would probably not even put it in my top five from him. But I've been a fan of Fincher for a long time, and I like pretty much everything that he's done. There are a few films where I'm not as high on as others. But I do think this is one of the more underrated films that he's put out. And Jodie Foster is incredible in this. Like, this is literally the Jodie Foster show, front and back. And Kristen Stewart, at the time, she was only like 11 or 12 when she made this movie. And she plays a girl that has, oh my God, what is it? She has diabetes. So there's a whole sequence where she's low on blood sugar, and Forrest Whitaker has to inject her because Jodie is unable to do it. I don't remember exactly why, because I haven't seen this movie in so long, but I remember Kristen Stewart just acting like, you know, she could die. And for a 11, 12-year-old to give a performance like that is really exceptional. Watching that movie, I'm like, man, at 11 or 12 years old, I wasn't doing jack. I couldn't pull that off if I was 11 or 12. I can't even pull that off now, and I'm in my 20s. It's insane. Just comes to show, when you watch a child act on screen, you're like, wow, I'm literally the most talentless person ever, and this kid gives so much to their performances. But yeah, I enjoy Panic Room a lot. I think, it's not my favorite film from Fincher, but I think it is one that's solid and entertaining and enthralling. So Panic Room is my number five. Are you gonna pass, or is this not on your list?
It's not on my list.
So do you have any thoughts on Panic Room? Have you seen it? Is it something that you're not very high on? What is your take on Panic
Room? I actually
Room?
Haven't seen it. It is on my list because I do like David Fincher films. But I think what strikes me is, because obviously I've heard about performances, I've seen scenes, and the fact that, like, obviously she's acting with Jodie Foster, who obviously is a two-time Oscar winner, and she's 11 years old, nominee, sorry, and she's 11 years old, I think that just says everything about her acting abilities. Like, nothing phases her at all, which is so impressive. Like you said, like, her being 11, I was thinking about me when I was 11, I'm just not, you know, not like that at all. Like, I wouldn't have the confidence. But yeah, it is kind of mad to think that she's been
at 11, you were watching Twilight. That's what you were doing at 11.
I was in my bedroom, like, with Twilight posters everywhere. But it is insane that, you know, she's been around since she was 11 years old, and to kind of see her career from that moment is really right. impressive.
Absolutely. What is your favorite David Fincher film, just out of curiosity?
Gone Girl.
Oh, that's a good one. That's a good. I actually just rewatched that very recently. That's a good one. It's hard to believe that that film is 10 years old now. It's hard to believe. It's insane. That's probably, like, that's in my top five Fincher, but that's not my favorite from him. That would probably be, like, number three or number four.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a Social Network boy. that's my favorite from him. He was robbed of, like, every Oscar for that movie. He was robbed. He should have won Best Director for that. But that's a different discussion for a different time. So now going into our number fours, what is your pick?
The Runaways. I obviously, coming into this is the first time I watched it. And I really wanted to watch it from, obviously, her Twilight period, because she reunites with Dakota Fanning. And oh my God, she is Joan Jett. Like, just, I didn't even know Kristen Stewart could, like, remotely sing. So when she picks up that guitar and she starts, like, with her, like her voice, I was, like, really impressed that she could embody someone as hardcore as Joan Jett. And yeah, I was just really impressed. Obviously, sure, it's not the best film I've ever seen, but it was a lot of fun. You could tell a lot of care has gone into, obviously, playing Joan. And yeah, I was just really impressed by her edginess in it. And it's such a different role for her as well, I feel like. Because obviously we know that she's done kind of like biopics later in her career. But for me, this was just, when you look at them side by side, like Joan Jett and Kristen Stewart, they just kind of like mold into one. And that's what I like about someone playing someone else. Because sometimes, you know, the casting can be really off, which doesn't benefit a film at all. But I feel like the casting on this was spot on.
So this is not on my list simply because I haven't seen this movie, unfortunately. The idea of a music biopic has been so off-putting these last few years for me, because we've gotten just so many of them that follow the same formula. Mm-hmm. And obviously this came out in 2010, so music biopics, while there were plenty of them out at this point, they weren't what they are now, where you could tell the formula that they're going to go with when putting out a music biopic.
Mm-hmm.
But seeing images of Kristen Stewart's Joan Jett, I mean, that's a really interesting casting. And I actually just saw Joan Jett live, like, very recently, which was really fun. And I could happily admit that I've seen both Joan Jett live in person and Kristen Stewart live in person, which is really cool. Mm-hmm. So yeah, this is one that I've wanted to check out for a while. I heard pretty good things about it when it came out, and obviously you were just glowing about it as well. So it's definitely one that I want to get around to at some point. And I do think it's interesting how this was obviously out during the Twilight period and everything, and how, like you said, it was a reunion between her and Dakota Fanning, who, I mean, they really didn't have a lot of scenes together in Twilight, so it was kind of cool that there was a movie where they were together, like, a lot of the movie.
And so, I think, yeah, that's as well, it kind of breaks away as well, because obviously Twilight was such a big thing at the time. It kind of allowed her to kind of break away from that kind of stereotype of her as Bella Swan. Like, she cut off her hair, and as well, because I know like later down in Twilight she was obviously wearing a wig, so it's interesting for me to kind of know that she was taking, you know, she could have gone down a whole different road from Twilight. She could be in like Marvel films by now, but she chose these kind of carefully crafted, totally different films from Twilight. And I was also impressed by that kind of aspect of probably like why she chose to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. And my number four is a completely drastic different film from The Runaways. I'm going to go with Happiest Season from 2020. I loved this movie. I love this movie. And I know that it did very well critically, but I feel like there's not as many people who love it as much as me. I love a good holiday film. I'm not a big romance movie guy, I'll admit that. Maybe I'm just very cynical and I just hate life, but I love Happiest Season. And, you know, this was such an interesting role for Kristen Stewart to tackle. And I think it brings out one of her most lovely turns that she's done. You know, she's a woman who wants to propose to her girlfriend while her the girlfriend's family's holiday party is happening and everything. But then what sets all this back is that her girlfriend hasn't come out to her parents yet. And a lot of shenanigans ensue, a lot of great comedy ensues, but also a lot of good drama comes into fruition as well. I think Kristen here, it's a very different performance from her. It's more laid back and relaxing, but she also looks like she's having a ball making this movie. Kristen Stewart has done some comedy, but I feel like she hasn't explored comedy as much as she honestly should. I think if given a good script, she could really work in a comedy very, very well. This isn't the most laugh out loud, funny performance that she could give and everything, because the person who does all the great comedy here is Dan Levy. He is so funny in this. He's so great in this. And I love their chemistry with each other. But I really also admire the relationship between Kristen Stewart and Mackenzie Davis. I really loved that story too. And just hearing a little bit about how Kristen Stewart's character went through some tragedy in her life and how she doesn't really love Christmas as much as she should is a really interesting element to this movie. And how Mackenzie Davis, she has this big family, all of who celebrate this annual holiday party, and all these things come about and everything. But I remember really being a big fan of this. I haven't seen it since it came out. I remember I was going to try to make this a yearly Christmas watch, but I haven't seen it since 2020 when it came out. And I was a big fan of it. I thought it was a very lovely, charming, endearing film. And it was nice to see Kristen Stewart step out of her comfort zone and do some comedy of sorts. And hopefully this gives her more opportunity to do comedy, because I think, again, if given a really good script and working with a good filmmaker, I have a feeling that she could really knock it out of the park with a comedy. So Happy Season is my number four. Are you going to pass, or is this not on your list?
It's not on my list. And I've wanted to watch this for a very long time because, like you said, this is such a different role for Kristen. And I've watched the trailer so many times for it because I've been meaning to watch it. But I don't know about you, but she kind of gives off this whole like different confidence. Like, even just from not even watching the film, it seems like she's very happy. Like, and I feel like that point came at a point in her life where she was quite open about certain things, you know, especially with her sexuality. And you can just see this more like kind of glow. Like, she, not that she was hiding anything, but, you know, she felt more open here. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I definitely feel like that kind of transcribes within that performance and also her performances after that, like compared to like Twilight Kristen and Runaway Kristen and things like that. There's just this new kind of confidence about her, which I really admire as an actor. And especially, I think also, like you said, she's not done much comedy, so it's nice to kind of see her track record of the type of films that she can do. She can basically do anything.
Exactly. And now transition into our number threes. What is your pick?
My number three is still Alice. And Kristen isn't even like the lead character, but I think her performance as Lydia, the daughter of Julianne Moore's character, who's going through Alzheimer's, or is it dementia?
I think it's Alzheimer's.
Alzheimer's, yeah. And it's just heartbreaking because, you know, for some people who go through that experience, probably relate to her performance within it. It's so kind of raw, complex. And again, just kind of shows off her acting abilities with not even being a lead within the role. Like, she can take like 10 minutes of screen time in one scene and completely just nail it and give off every emotion possible. So, yeah.
Any more thoughts on this movie?
I felt quite sad after watching it because I had a family member who had dementia, and which is, you know, she couldn't remember many people in my family. And, you know, kind of, this was when I was very younger, so it was a film that kind of really hit hard. And obviously, Kristen's performance, I don't want to say it was like a family member, like, but my dad was caring for my grandma who had it, and, you know, there might be a bit of frustration there because it's hard to kind of interpret it because it's such a hard-hitting film, and I'm so glad Kristen was a part of it and Julianne got her kind of Oscar moment with that film because it's just, mm-hmm. It was well-written, but also quite simple in its, like, dialogue. Like, it's not a very long film, but it's very simplistic. Like, it didn't need much for it to have much impact. And yeah, Julianne and Kristen, I would like to see more of them in more films because I feel like they had a very good on-screen chemistry with one another.
Yeah, I unfortunately have not seen this one. This is another one that I haven't gotten around to watching. I think for me, not that the movie looked bad or anything, because it looked incredible. It looked quite good. For a movie like this, the subject matter is just like, I have to be in the mood to watch a movie like this. And especially considering that, like, we've gotten movies where people have dealt with Alzheimer's or dementia.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the scary thing with this movie is that Julianne Moore's character is so young when she's diagnosed with this. Like, that's a truly terrifying thing of how, you know, Alzheimer's or dementia isn't something you could get only when you're, like, in your 70s or 80s or 90s. Like, unfortunately, you could get it, like, very young in your life, and that's a really terrifying situation. So, I think it's interesting to hear about it from the perspective of someone who had a family member go through something similar where you didn't know what was going to happen with them,
mm-hmm.
and how they were questioning everything. And to see Julianne Moore bring a role like that to life, obviously being someone who doesn't even have this disease, is really extraordinary. And I mean, I love Julianne Moore. I think she's so good. I honestly think she was just robbed of an Oscar nomination this year for May, December. I think she should have been nominated for that.
I agree.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, seeing her do a role like this is really impressive. And I'm really glad that she got her flowers. Obviously, having not seen the movie, I've seen clips and just watching the sequences. It's really impressive the places that she goes to bring this character to life. And Kristen Stewart looks like she's on a whole other level here too, you know, playing a daughter who, obviously I haven't seen the movie, but from what I gather, she's not very close with her mom, right? Mm-hmm. Isn't she kind of distant from her mom?
Yeah, so Kristen's character is wanting to be an actor, and her mom doesn't really support that. Even though she does support it, she's very much like, do you have a backup plan? And it causes a lot of friction because, you know, when you are young, you do kind of have that in your head, like, this is my plan, this is really what I want to do. And that within itself is really relatable to us younger audiences. And then I think, obviously, once the Alzheimer's gets worse in her mum, that's when she starts caring for her. But I think the representation of, you know, Julianne's character is very young, Kristen's character is very young, and kind of coming to terms with what's happening. I can imagine it was quite complex to kind of get the emotions and things like that. A lot of research probably going into it as well. It's just one of them films. I quite like a hard-hitting film. I like to be a sad girl in the cinema sometimes, and it's just, I find it quite thought-provoking. There's a TV presenter in the UK. She's just been diagnosed with dementia in her 60s. So it is frightening, but also it happens, and it for me, it kind of like put it in perspective a bit that life is kind of too short, and we need to care about family members. And I felt like that with Kristen Stewart's performance in this, actually, even though like they butted heads and they argued, when her mom's so sick, she's there and she absorbs every minute of her helping her, even if it's like taking her on a walk and things like that. So yeah. Oh, even just talking about it, I'm like, oh.
Yeah, it's there are films like that that just leave that impact on you.
Mm-hmm.
It is one that I really do want to watch. I definitely want to get around to checking it out and everything. Mm-hmm. And the last thing I'll say before I move on to my number three is that while you were talking about, I was reading about how this couple of husbands directed the movie. And one of them was actually battling ALS, and he actually passed away right after the movie came out. And I remember reading that when Julianne Moore won her Oscar, she dedicated the award to him. I don't know if he had already passed at that point or if he was like getting there, but yeah, that's so devastating. And I really do want to check out the film, hopefully sooner rather than later. And then I'll have to put on like a really funny movie after that to make me feel good again.
Mm-hmm.
I'll have to do that. So number three for me is going to be Personal Shopper. I just watched this movie for the first time a few days ago in preparation for this. It's one that I had been wanting to watch for a very long time, and I really, really, really dug it. I think the concept of this being a ghost story is very interesting. I didn't really know much about the movie walking into it. Like, I knew that Kristen Stewart, and she's in Paris and then dealing with this trauma. I didn't really know the context of it until I actually sat down to watch the movie, and I thought it was so captivating from start to finish. It's a very odd film. You have to be in the right mindset to watch something like this, and it's definitely not one that you're going to fully understand on the first viewing. I do owe it to myself to watch it again, even though I just watched it a few days ago at the time of this recording. But I really loved Kristen's performance. It's a very quiet performance from her, very restrained. But then there are moments where she's terrified, and you're terrified for the character of Maureen. And it was just this interesting side of her that I feel like I hadn't really seen from her. And it makes me realize that I would love for her to do more. This isn't necessarily like a horror film, but it's kind of borderline thriller, mystery, drama. So there are some horror elements into it. And I think that she really crushes it. This is in contention for being possibly my favorite performance from her. It's not my favorite performance from her, but it's, like, if I had to do a top three, maybe even top two ranking, this would maybe make those lists. And I don't know. I just found myself so enamored by the story of how she tries to make contact with her brother who passed away in Paris. And then all of a sudden her life becomes complicated, where she's receiving these texts from this mysterious person who she doesn't know and everything. And what the director does so fascinatingly is that there are shots where you see like doors opening and closing and people moving, but you don't see the person on screen. And then all of a sudden you cut to seeing that exact same scene with someone there. And it's such an interesting filmmaking approach that I was really impressed by. I haven't really delved into this filmmaker's catalog. I know that he also previously worked with Kristen Stewart on Clouds of Sils Maria, which I also really enjoyed. That's not on my list, but I feel like when these two work together, they create really good material. And I dug Personal Shopper very much, and it's definitely one that I would love to watch again down the road. So Personal Shopper is my number three. Is this film on your list? If not, I would be curious to hear your thoughts on this film.
It's not. I actually only got like halfway before I had technical issues watching it, which was super annoying, because you're so right. It was such a kind of refreshing role for Kristen. And very, like, it was kind of a different film going into it. I didn't really know what to expect going into it. And it's very like a dark toned film, and like you said, with like horror elements. I can't wait to watch it again, but for me, it just wasn't what I expected, which is what I like from a Kristen Stewart film. It's like you never know what you're gonna get. So yeah, I can't really contribute much because I feel like I'll contribute more once I've seen the full thing. But from what I saw from it, I was very impressed.
Yeah, and I'm usually hit or miss with the idea of ghost stories in film and everything. But, you know, I like the more subtle versions of ghost stories where it's not like in your face. Like recently All of Us Strangers really blew me away, and I thought that was a unique approach to bring the ghost story to life. It was very subtle, like it was very you could obviously it wasn't real, but it felt very realistic compared to a lot of these other ghost stories that we've gotten.
It's very like psychological, isn't it? Like, you know, I feel like I feel like we're in this modern era of like psychological horror. So, you know, like Midsommar was, Ari Aster was very psychological in that kind of sense of her going through that issue within her relationship. And you kind of get that feel from Personal Shop. It's very, like you said, ghost stories are very hit and miss. Like a lot of the time they're done quite cheesy. And just, you know, you get that sense like this would never ever feel real. But this, it does have that psychological element, similar to what you were saying about All of the Strangers, where it's there, but it's still quite hidden and not in your face, which is, I think, a testament to obviously the director, the screenplay, because it's more convincing. And that's kind of what I like about the dark tone of the film as well. It makes it feel a bit more believable, weirdly enough. And I don't know about you, but the film's setting as well looked really just realistic. I know films this kind of day and age, you use a lot of green screens and not really, do you get what I mean? It just felt very like you could kind of walk into the frame and or like go into the next room and probably, you know. Yeah, I was very impressed by how it looked visually.
And now our top two, this is going to be very interesting to hear our top two favorite Kristen Stewart films. So what is your second favorite Kristen Stewart film of all time?
Spencer. I rewatched it yesterday, actually, and I was so impressed. Obviously, being in the UK, Princess Diana is quite a memorable figure. She's quite iconic, and it's one of them roles that people have the idea that no one can touch it. No one can go near a performance of Princess Diana because she's not Princess Diana. You know, I never watched the Naomi Watts biopic purely because I kind of had that thing where she looked nothing like her, like the makeup.
It sucks. Don't watch it. It sucks.
But Don't watch it. I think everything happens in like the mannerisms, the hair and makeup especially. I know we, obviously, I don't know if you've watched The Crown.
I have not seen The Crown, unfortunately. It's a major blind spot of a series for me.
Well, that was a very good performance as Princess Diana too, but obviously, this is a fable, and I really enjoyed Jackie with Natalie Portman. I personally felt that Natalie Portman was robbed of that, so I really trusted.
Yes.
I feel I went going into this film that I felt quite trusted with the director. Like going into it, I felt I know that this isn't going to be a rip-off version of Princess Diana, and like I said, it was a fable, so these events are. It's a story. It's not, we don't know what happened. There's that scene at the end where there's like a montage of her in the wedding dress with, you know, that scene where she's got, you know, like, she's got the hat on and it like covers her face and she's just like looking up. It's her mannerisms, the way she spoke, the way she moved her head. Everything about it was so well researched. And I was just generally blown away that Kristen could even do a performance like that. Not that I should be shocked that she could have. But for me, she really articulated Princess Diana's like attitude. I love the scene at the end, you know, where she's driving her kids to Prince Harry and Prince William to KFC. Because you kind of get that feeling like, I obviously, Princess Diana died the year that I was born, but I've read like things about her and how, you know, she was quite outgoing. And I feel like Kristen really did her research well to get that mannerism and, you know, just that Princess Diana really just wanted to be able to be her, be free, and not live with like having security driver everywhere she needed to go. Like she wanted to be in that car and listen to her music on full blast. I was just really blown away by it. And again, I was really rooting for Kristen to win her Oscar for that performance. And to think that that was her first Oscar nomination as well is quite mad. I'm just sitting here thinking about probably the last 20 minutes of Spencer being in awe of her.
So number two for me is a film that you talked about earlier, Adventureland.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of hinted when we started recording that I feel like this is going to be a bit of a controversial number two to some people, but it's just important for me to preface that coming of age is my favorite genre. So naturally I have a bit more appreciation for these films more than others. And it's set in the '80s, and I love films set in the '80s. It's set during the summer, so it's very fun and lively and energetic. And I also just think that it's a really great comedy. This movie is fucking hilarious. This movie is so friggin' funny. Mm-hmm. There are so many moments that really just hurt my chest because of how much I'm laughing from it. Kristen's obviously not the funniest person in this movie. It's a very, very charming performance. Her character is very troubled. There's a lot of stuff going on with her character that I will not spoil just in case if anyone out there hasn't seen this movie. But it's a very underrated coming-of-age film. I feel like a lot of people don't talk about this one as much as they should. And it was the first of many collaborations between her and Jesse Eisenberg. And I think they work off each other really well. And I would love for them to do another film together. I think both of them are so good with one another. And what's interesting, too, is that both of them have similar vibes, but also different vibes. So I feel like they work off each other so well because of their dynamic and how their personalities are similar, but also different from one another. And, you know, the directions that this film goes, obviously, again, I won't spoil, but I remember the first time I watched this, I was so caught off guard with where it went and everything. Without spoiling it, the character played by Ryan Reynolds, the stuff that happens with that character blows my mind. It's insane. And then the comedy here is hysterical. Major shout out, huge shout out to Bill Hader and Kristen Wiig. they're so funny. And one of my favorite moments in the film is when these like very rough and rude people come and they play games, and then one of them's chasing Jesse Eisenberg down as the Judas Priest song is blasting, breaking the law. and then he just runs to the office, and then Bill Hader just comes out with the bat, just give me a fucking reason. it's so good. No, and I love the film. I think it's great. It holds up very well in my opinion. It's crazy that the guy who directed this went from making Superbad, which is such a drastically different film, to this. Just comes to show how much range he has, I guess, as a filmmaker. But I adore Adventureland. And I love how in 2009, Jesse Eisenberg did two films that had the word land in the title. So he did this and Zombieland, which are two completely different films, but they're both comedies. So major respect on that regard. So yeah, I love Adventureland. And I'm glad that both of us had it on our list, because I really do believe that's one of the more underrated films from Kristen Stewart. And I know that it was super early in her filmography, but it's one that I'm surprised doesn't get as much attention as it should.
Yeah, I agree with that. And to be fair, I did get moments where I was like, her performance was giving me like Bella Swan. But like you, I really like coming of age stories, and that kind of like hit the nail on the head, like perfect amount of comedy, right amount of, you know, like love, like romance kind of thing. And it was just all around like a good, fun film to watch and kind of relate to. But about the Ryan Reynolds character, yeah, I did read about how him and Kristen Stewart had a bit of an awkward time filming that.
Oh, I'm sure. I can imagine.
But yeah, it was really good.
And now our number ones, our favorite Kristen Stewart film of all time. I have a feeling that I know you're number one, but maybe I'll be wrong. So tell the listeners what your favorite Kristen Stewart film of all time is. Is it what I think it is?
I kind of want you to say what you think it is.
Oh, no, I can't. I hate whenever people ask me to guess their number ones. It's got to be a Twilight film. It has to be Twilight, right?
So my number one is New Moon. I don't know if that's what you thought.
Well, I mean, I was half correct. It is a Twilight film, but...
So, I know there's that, you know, there's that meme, obviously, you know, where she sat and it's like October, November, December.
Oh, my God.
But for me, as a girl who's been through relationship issues, she got it spot on. That is what every girl basically goes through when she goes through a breakup. We sit, we mellow, we cry, we just sit there. Everything is, we're disinterested in everything. And I just felt every emotion watching it. And obviously I had Lucky Lee's possibility in the background. But I think compared to Twilight, New Moon had a different edge to it. I think and visually it was a lot warmer in colour tone, which is also another reason why I'm fascinated in Twilight, is because of the film's colour. And, you know, I just kind of felt that that is my favourite performance of her as Bella Swan as well. In New Moon, where she's going through all these emotions, she's like, I want to be a vampire, but Edward, where are you? But then she's like, Jacob, but I love you too. I was like, what is going on? But I can't articulate in words how much I just love that film and I love her performance in that film and how I do relate to it in some weird way that perhaps only some girls can relate to as well. But yeah.
So what makes New Moon your favorite Twilight film specifically? Like, what makes that one your favorite one?
I think it... I don't know if it's also the music that was a contribution to it. I really love the soundtrack to it. And also the fact that it is, like I said, about the colour, it's more orange-toned, whereas Twilight was more blue-toned. And I think, even though I did enjoy the first Twilight film, it's nice to kind of get to know the other characters and kind of her explore life without Edward, because we all go through breakups and kind of have to imagine a world without that other person. And she had to go through it. And I think that visually mixed in with the music and obviously being a big fan of the book, it was very faithful to the book. I think that's why I just kind of always kind of get drawn to it in a weird way. And obviously Dakota Fanning is in that film as well. So that's two films in my list with both of them. And I just feel like she has really good chemistry with every person in Twilight that she's worked with. And obviously we know at the time that her and Robert Pattinson were kind of together. So that obviously makes sense, but yeah, I like a film that is faithful from its book. And I think that's also why I kind of gravitated to that one really.
So, this is actually my favorite Twilight film. I don't know why. This is actually the one I think I've seen the most. I remember going to see this opening night. I went with my sister and my mom to go see it. And I don't know why. It's very entertaining and it's dumb. And then during the height of COVID, I got together with some friends of mine when we were in lockdown and I was just watching New Moon. I don't know. I love it. It's great. It's bad, but it's great. I don't know. I think it's entertaining. I think it's hilarious. I think it's mind blowing that the guy who directed this directed American Pie and About a Boy, you know, range right there. I mean, that's crazy. Yeah. I mean, look, these films, are they ridiculous? Yes. Are they perfect? No. Are they the worst thing in the world? Absolutely not. They're very entertaining. They do take themselves seriously, but that's a part of the charm of these movies and what makes them really fun to watch, especially when you're with a group of people. like you could get together, have a couple of drinks or do edibles or whatever is your preference and just have a great time watching them. And yeah, just being a teenager when these movies came out, like a person in their early teens when these movies came out, it was quite the phenomenon. And, you know, I don't think we'll ever get anything like this in terms of film where, like, everybody was talking about, like, everyone was going out to see these movies. But
I agree. Yeah, I pitched an article about that, about how we'll never experience anything like Harry Potter, Hunger Games, and Twilight in our generation ever again.
Yeah, I don't see that happening. I mean, we've had TV shows that are like, that are so impactful to our generation, but it's just not the same. Like with film, there's just something different about when a film series comes out and it's so impactful and everything. I mean, I'm glad that we lived in a time where we had the Barbenheimer craze. I loved that we had that whole phenomenon, but you know, we're never going to have a series like Twilight or Harry Potter or Hunger Games where like everybody goes out to see those movies opening weekend and everyone's talking about them. But maybe down the road we will. I don't know. Hopefully, maybe, fingers crossed. And now finally I get to talk about my number one, which is indeed Spencer.
Yeah.
You know, you talked about being born the year that Princess Diana died. My mom was pregnant with me when Princess Diana died. And I mean, obviously, I cannot imagine being alive in that time and just like, you know, you're just sitting around watching TV. Then all of a sudden the news just says breaking news, Princess Diana dies. And everyone's just like, what the fuck? Like, what? And when it was announced that Pablo Larraín was following Jackie with a movie about Princess Diana, but it wasn't going to be a conventional biopic. It was going to be, like you said, a fable, and it was going to focus on a certain period of when she left the royal family. I know there are a lot of people out there that don't like the approach that this movie goes down and how it kind of treated Princess Diana in a different light. I don't really know too much about her as a person, so I can't say that this was faithful to who she was and everything, but judging the film itself and just as a film alone, I think it's so captivating, it is so riveting, and this is the best acting that Kristen Stewart has ever done. I remember walking out of this movie, and it's funny, it wasn't until my second viewing where I appreciated this film a lot more. I liked it a lot on my first viewing, but I wasn't fully emotionally invested with it. But then the second viewing really, like, hit home for me. And I do think that she should have won the Oscar. She was my personal pick of the nominees. While she wasn't my favorite performance of that year, my favorite performance that year from an actress was Renata Reinsfeld in The Worst Person in the World. I thought she was robbed of a nomination, personally. I thought she should have been nominated. But from what we got, I was very happy that Kristen got in, because there was a lot of worry that she wouldn't even make the Oscar 5 because she was missing out at a lot of precursors. But then the Oscars did her justice and nominated her. And it's very cool to say Oscar nominee Kristen Stewart. And I love Jessica Chastain so much. I mean, she's probably my favorite person in the world, but she should not have won the Oscar for Tammy Faye. I'm so sorry. That's not Jessica Chastain's best performance, if I'm being honest.
Oh, no. No. I agree.
It's not her best work. I'm happy that she's an Oscar winner, but she should have won for Zero Dark Thirty instead. But I digress. Spencer is the kind of biopic that I love to see, of how it's not cradle to grave. It just takes a certain period of the person's life. Like, obviously, when the movie began, she was already famous. And when the movie ended, it just, you know, she was still famous and everything. It wasn't like we needed to see the rise of Princess Diana, then the fall of her life. We've gotten many stories that have tackled a lot of elements of her life, but for this movie to tackle this small period, I really appreciate. And I have to commend the filmmaking in this film. The imagery is so stunning. It's so gorgeous. A lot of the frames here look like a portrait that you hang up in like a mansion or whatever. Claire Mathen shot this film. She shot Portrait of a Lady on Fire, which was also robbed of a cinematography nomination. I mean, that film was done dirty at the Oscars. And with the case of this film, it's shot beautifully. The costumes are gorgeous. The production design is immaculate. and the score by Johnny Greenwood, who's one of my favorite musicians. I'm a huge Radiohead fan, so naturally hearing that Johnny Greenwood is doing music scores for films is awesome. This score should have been nominated for Best Score, and honestly, it should have won Best Score. And the fact that he hasn't won an Oscar for any of his film compositions yet is really sickening. He should have won for Phantom Thread, if I'm being honest.
That one is my favorite score of all time, Phantom Thread.
Yeah, he should have won for that. I love Alexander Desplat. I love his score for Shape of Water, and I do like Shape of Water as well. But Johnny Greenwood's music for Phantom Thread, I mean, you listen to that score, you would not think in a million years that that's the Johnny Greenwood of Radiohead. Mm-hmm. You would not think in a million years that that's the same person. But I really like how you brought up you're a big fan of Jackie. I'm a huge fan of Jackie, and Natalie Portman absolutely should have won the Oscar for that. And I remember after watching that, I'm like, I gotta see whatever this guy does next. And then when it was announced that he was doing a Princess Diana movie with Kristen Stewart in the lead, I got so excited. Now, a lot of people also got worried about this film because Kristen Stewart is obviously not British. She's American. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people were cautious about the accent that she was going to put on. I don't know about you, but within the first 5 to 10 minutes, I forgot that Kristen Stewart was American. The accent was really impressive, and it was very... I don't really like whenever people do, like, Americans doing British or German or Irish accents. Like, when they're not doing an American accent, it's very off-putting to me. Mm-hmm. And I think that this is one of the better examples of, like, great accent work. And it made me go, you know, if Kristen Stewart does another British accent, I would be behind it, because it made me think a lot of Emma Stone when she did The Favorite. I'm like, oh, why is she doing the British accent? She's American. Like, please, no. And then it took me a couple minutes to get adjusted to it. And once I did, I was a huge fan of that. But I think this is a far better example of how an American could pull off doing a non-American accent. Say that one more time.
Did you see Saltburn? Because Jacob El-Dori, I keep saying it to people that I've watched it. I'm like, Jacob El-Dori's voice reminds me of Princess Diana, where he's like, I've got a flat tire, like that. And I'm there like, Kristen Stewart compared to Jacob El-Dori's like kind of British accent. Do you get what I'm
saying? No, I totally get what you're saying.
You kind of get the turn, because Princess Diana is like, the way she says certain, it's kind of like Jackie Kennedy, isn't it? How Natalie Portman got Jackie Kennedy's like kind of twang on her accent, like so spot on. Kristen Stewart did that with Princess Diana, because Princess Diana obviously had a very low, soft, calming voice, but very upper class. And
absolutely,
that must have had like a lot of vocal coaching to get spot on, because you can't play Princess Diana if you don't get the voice.
Yeah, I just, like, she nailed the accent. She also, like, nailed the posture of Diana as well. Like, and, like, there were a lot of close-ups where, like, her face was moving in interesting ways. And then I would look at side-by-side footage of the real Princess Diana, and I'm like, she nailed it. And honestly, like, even though you knew it was Kristen Stewart, there were times where, like, there would be very wide shots where you would see her from far away, and I'm like, is that Princess Diana or is that Kristen Stewart? Like, it would just be uncanny resemblance. It was insane. And I really love how you brought up that final scene.
I love
of where she takes her children to the KFC, and then they're sitting in the car. All I need is a miracle and everything. I think that that scene was so good because she finally felt free.
Mm-hmm.
And in that moment, I mean, obviously knowing that Diana had passed away a few years later, it was just so sad to, like, know that she really didn't get to live the long life that she deserved. And I do wonder what things would be like for her now if, say, she's still alive right now. Like, I genuinely wonder what things would be like for her if she were still around today. And I would be curious to know her perspective on this film, or even if this film would have been made. But yeah, I adore Spencer. It's fantastic. And Kristen Stewart's work is exceptional. And I know there are people out there that don't like this movie. It's definitely not the most rewatchable movie. It's definitely not the most accessible movie. It's very different. And it's very slow and it's very quiet. But I think it earns its pacing and its approach. And, you know, there's a sequence where she's walking down the hallway after eating that pea soup. And I will say that after this movie, I never looked at pea soup the same way ever again. And it looks like a good soup. And it's like, oh, God, just her walking down the hall and just, like, freaking out and everything. And then the crunching of the pearls and everything. Oh, my God. Ugh, I just
I liked what you said about how visually it looks like something in, like, a gallery. It looks like artwork. I feel like his films will be great as, like, art house films, like, actually viewing them in, like, a gallery. Could you imagine? Because they are so soft and they're very delicate films, especially with, you know, Johnny Greenwood's score and the silences within that film. I could imagine just sitting in a gallery and watching it compared to, like, a cinema. It'd be a very interesting take. Like somewhere in London, like the National Portrait Gallery, very British, very, you know, things like that. Yeah. I'm interested to see what he does next as well with Angelina Jolie.
Yeah, I feel like that's going to be, like, a huge, like, awards player. I feel like that's going to be, like, because Angelina Jolie hasn't really done a lot these last few years, especially as a lead. So I feel like this is going to be, like, a good comeback role for her, where it's going to get her some notoriety once again. And it's actually written by the same guy who wrote Spencer. So I have faith. I think it will be a good film. I'm pretty confident that it will be a good film. So before we close out the episode, I just wanted to quickly recap our top five list from 5 to 1. So, Tasha, what is your list?
From 5 to 1. So, Adventureland is 5. 4 is The Runaways. 3 is Still Alice. 2 is Spencer. And the first one is New Moon.
And to recap my list, coming in number 5 is Panic Room, number 4 is Happiest Season, number 3 is Personal Shopper, number 2 is Adventureland, and number 1 is Spencer. So that is all of our lists. Are there any films that you want to give a shout out to that didn't make your top 5 list?
Oh, I feel like my mind's just gone blank of that. Do you remember that, like, space film she did where the house goes into, like, space?
Oh, Sothora. I just rewatched that the other day.
That film, I don't know about you, but I love watching, like, films from my childhood for the, like, the nostalgic. Oh, absolutely. And that was probably one of my first introductions, really, to Kristen Stewart. And I had that film on repeat. And I really, you know, it was just such a great performance from her, especially with how old she probably was. Like, so, yeah, that's probably a memorable film that I would like to mention as well, purely for the nostalgic. Because
that's a fun movie. I would love if she and Josh Hutcherson were together again. That would be really cool.
Because I feel like Josh Hutcherson, obviously he had his prime time, obviously in The Hunger Games, and he just had Five Nights at Freddy's, which we won't mention. But it would be nice to see him, especially with Kristen Stewart, kind of do like quite a gripping kind of drama, maybe like an indie film.
Yeah, and it would be fun if they were brother and sister again. That would be really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that would be an honorable mention for me as well. And then Clouds of Sils Maria, I really liked that one a lot. I think the banter with her and Juliette Binoche was, like, very alluring. And, you know, it was kind of like a question of, like, will they, won't they do stuff? And I'm obviously not going to spoil it, but, yeah, it just goes in directions that I wasn't expecting. I actually enjoyed Cafe Society. Unfortunately, like, you know, it's hard to talk about films from that filmmaker now in the midst of everything that happened these last few years. But I really like, again, when she works with Jesse Eisenberg, I think they work off each other very, very well. And I really liked Kristen Stewart's performance in that film. I actually thought she was a really good fit for that kind of movie and that period. Kristen Stewart kind of has a face where she, like, her face seems to work really in any time period, which is interesting because some actors don't really have that. Some actors work better in films set in the past, or they work better in films set in the present. An example, and this is very brief, Keira Knightley, I don't really buy her in films set in present day. I feel like she works best in period films. That may be a bit of a hot take, but...
No, I agree with you.
Yeah. And then just to quickly go through some of the films that she has coming out, we have Love Lies Bleeding, which obviously comes out very, very soon. We have Love Me, which premiered at Sundance, similar to Love Lies Bleeding. And she's currently filming a film called Sacramento, which is a comedy road trip movie with Michael Cera. And she's also in the midst of getting her directorial debut off the ground. So talk a little bit about your excitement for these projects and everything.
Oh, I'm so excited for her to actually do a directorial, because I think she'll... I feel like this is probably like a long time in the making for her. I think she'll be... With how different some of her projects are, I feel like she'll have such a great eye for certain directions. I'm very excited about that. Obviously, excited for her upcoming film, Love Lies Bleeding. I'm so excited for her, especially because it's Rose Glass's second film. So it'd be quite interesting to see, you know, what that all that's about. I feel like it's going to be an interesting road ahead to kind of see what she does next. Like, I feel like we're probably going to be surprised at some point.
Yeah.
Especially with Sacramento. I feel like that'll be a bit of a different kind of turn in the direction for her.
Yeah, I'm very excited for Love Lies Bleeding. It looks great. I'm very excited to check it out. Sacramento sounds like it could be a really fun film. And again, like I said before, I would love to see her do more comedy, so I'm really interested in that. Love Me, I saw at Sundance, the virtual version of Sundance. I was a little disappointed with that film, if I'm being honest. I feel like it didn't really have the hook that I was hoping, but I really liked her chemistry with Steven Yeun. I thought they worked off each other very well. And I would love to see them collaborate together again. And then her directorial debut, I always get excited whenever I see an actor step behind the camera and do something completely different from what we're used to seeing from them. So I don't know too much about her directorial debut, but I want to go in knowing as little as possible. But yeah. I'm very excited to see what she does behind the camera. And then the last question that I'll pose to you before we close out is, who is a filmmaker that you want to see Kristen Stewart work with that she hasn't worked with? And what's a genre that you want to see her tackle that she hasn't done yet?
You know, weirdly enough, I was just thinking about that. I'd love her to work with Greta Gerwig. I know that Greta is doing, you know, the Narnia adaptation. And obviously from Kristen playing Snow White in Snow White and the Huntsman, I feel like if there was a character that fit there, that would be quite interesting for her. Like, kind of going into this magical world. Because Snow White and the Huntsman, I should have said that as well, because that was a great adaptation of a classic story, really. So I would love her to go into that kind of like fantasy kind of world. And Greta Gerwig has such a great take on female characters as well. I have read somewhere that she wants to delve back into like Sacramento. So it would be great for them to collab, I think. And weirdly enough, if Ari Aster ever did like a horror like Hereditary or Midsommar, Kristen Stewart would be a great lead, I feel like. You know, like a Florence Pugh kind of character, right? For Kristen,
absolutely. So for me, I'm a huge fan of film noir, and I think it would be really cool to see Kristen Stewart kind of do a noir type of film, especially set in like the 40s or 50s. That would be really really sick. And this director has never done a film like this before, but it's a filmmaker that I'm surprised Kristen Stewart hasn't worked with yet. I'm gonna say Sofia Coppola.
Yes,
I'm very surprised they haven't worked together yet, and I feel like it's in the cards. I feel like it's gonna happen at some point.
I feel like, you know, like a period kind of Marie Antoinette kind of, but not obviously Marie Antoinette, like a very good period kind of piece would be cool with Sofia.
Yeah, I mean, Sofia Coppola has done really exceptional work with the period genre. I mean, Virgin Suicides, that's a period piece. Marie Antoinette, obviously, The Beguiled, and recently Priscilla. I think that she could pull something out really, really cool. And it would be cool to see Sofia Coppola do a genre that she hasn't explored yet. Similar to when she made The Beguiled, that was so out of left field for her. And it was really cool to see her do something like that. So yeah, Kristen Stewart in a noir directed by Sofia Coppola. Give me all the credit, please. I would love for that to happen. I'll produce it myself if I have to. So final thoughts on Kristen Stewart. One of the best working today. A really exceptional performer. I hope that down the road, people will just stop saying that like, oh, she's not good because of Twilight. I really hope that people will just move on and actually explore her work and see the talent that she has bestowed upon us and all the incredible performances that she's given, all the great filmmakers, the actors that she's worked alongside. She is a really talented performer and I love her and I'm always excited to see whatever she does next. What are your final thoughts on Kristen Stewart?
I pretty much would echo the exact same of what you said. I think it's really impressive. You know, she is very young still, and her kind of line of work with that within that short period of life is so interesting, yet so it feels really calculated, but in like a very natural way, like a natural progression for her. So I am very excited to see what she does as she gets older. And especially now she seems more confident within herself. She is so interesting. And like I said before, I feel like she can take us by surprise with her work, and that's what makes her so thrilling. And I don't know about you, but you know, when you see her at like award shows and things like that, she's just herself. She yeah. just seems very unchanged from fame.
Right.
You know, like obviously you see some stars and Hollywood just completely changes them, which is obviously a natural thing for them. But Kristen's just very, she's super cool, seems very laid back. And I think that's kind of what I also love about it, is that she's not really like affected her or gone to her head. She's just, yeah, here I am chilling at the Oscars.
Absolutely. Tasha, thank you so much for coming on to the show today to talk to me about Kristen Stewart. It was such a blast getting to hear your takes on her filmography, and it was so great talking to you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Could you tell the listeners where they could find your work online?
Of course. I am on Twitter. I think it's _TashaJagger or TashaJagger_. I can never get which way round. I also am on Twitter with the same _ situation, but also I have set up, if there's any local listeners here in Sheffield, I've set up a film club called Film Girls Galore. Even if you're not in the local area, it would be potentially good for anyone really to kind of have a look and maybe set their own film clubs up anywhere around the world.
I will put links to all of Tasha's work in the description below, and you guys can follow me on all social media simply at Brian Suffield. You guys can subscribe to the show on any podcast and platform. We have a Twitter and Instagram, so you guys can stay up to date with what's going on in Film Fragments. Let us know your favorite Kristen Stewart films. I'd be curious to hear your guys' list. Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode. I really, really appreciate it. And I'll see you guys for the very next episode of Film Fragments. Take care, everybody.